on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm Jordan in the clutch, boy. You bitten on me? It's time to get it checked, boy. You on the sideline, you ain't made the headlines. Now it's time to reject, boy. You bitten on me? What's the topic of discussion? What you talking about? Take your best shot, I'ma take the last shot. I'm Jordan in the clutch, boy.
Alrighty, guys. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2021. We're going to start this year off with another episode of the Auto Bid. That was Pull Up Tay on the intro music, so make sure you guys go and stream his latest project, Life Ain't Fair. It was his newest music video called New on YouTube, so make sure y'all go ahead and stream that with NASB. Shout out to the Montgomery County artists putting on. But we have a jam-packed episode for you guys, man. We're going to have Hofstra men's basketball assistant coach and former NBA legend, NBA champion, Steve Clapton, joining the podcast later on today. He's going to talk to us about his NBA career and some Hofstra and CAA hoops. So I can't wait to get that to you guys. But before I get into that, and you know, before we get into our games of the week and things like that, I want to make sure I let you guys know, man, to like, subscribe, share this podcast, leave it a rating. It goes a long, long way as far as boosting our engagement and getting this podcast in front of the right eyes. Now, I know you guys love listening to this podcast, so don't be stingy, don't be selfish. You know, share it with your friends. Go ahead and give us a like, give us a subscribe, you know, and just help us get this podcast in front of the people who we need to get it in front of. Please and thank you guys. So, with that being said, Ace, man, we had a jam-packed weekend of mid-major basketball and high-major basketball. I mean, just a jam-packed weekend of college basketball and sports in general, man. I have to say, you know, I have to give a shout-out to my Washington football team for winning the division this weekend, clinching a playoff berth for the first time in 5 years. I know this is a college basketball podcast, but, you know, I would be remiss if I did not show some love to my guys. And like my guy Chase Young said, Brady, we coming for you this weekend. So, you know, like we say, you know, jam-packed sports weekend. So, Ace, man, tell me about, you know, your favorite game, what you saw this weekend, man, outside my Washington football team clinching the division and going to the playoffs, you know, outside of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know why you're so happy. I mean, the Eagles literally threw the game. They literally, you know, almost forfeited. I mean, so, it was a charity win, you know, so I don't know why everyone here all excited. I mean, you guys are going home, you know, in a matter of days at this point, once Brady gets a hold of you guys. So, I mean, enjoy it while it lasts. You know, I know you guys don't go to the playoffs, you know, very often over there. So I'll let you guys have, you know, my Ravens on the other hand, you know, this is our third straight year in the postseason. You know, we were able to clinch a playoff spot this year, this last weekend as well. So we're going to go ahead and go up to Tennessee and get some revenge for last year's debacle that happened, you know. So we're going to go ahead and get Tennessee out of there. But like you said, man, we had a jam-packed weekend of college basketball, man. So definitely want to talk about a lot of these games, man. I mean, the first one that stuck out to me was Furman over Mercer, man. I mean, I think you guys know this is a recurrent theme on this podcast. The SoCon is probably our favorite mid-major conference so far. I mean, we talk about it so much, but Furman picked up a win over Mercer this weekend. Mike Bothwell came up huge down the stretch for Furman, man. I mean, I think at this point, man, I think it's honestly looking like Furman is definitely going to be the best team in the SoCon. I mean, Wofford's at 2-0. ETSU, surprisingly, is also at 2-0. I mean, I know it's still early, so I don't want to necessarily say surprisingly. But they are at 2-0. But, I mean, I think Furman has just looked so good, man. It beat Chattanooga, who was undefeated. Chattanooga actually had a pretty disappointing loss to BMI. So they had lost two in a row after starting the season undefeated. But, you know, for this Furman team, man, they were beating Mercer pretty convincingly. And then they let them get back in the game late, man. But I really like this Furman team, man. They're extremely balanced in their scoring, man. I mean, Mike Bothwell is their leading scorer. I mean, the game versus Mercer, he was their third leading scorer, man. I mean, they had this kid, Clay Mounts, had a big-time game against Mercer the other night, pouring in 27 points, man. And then, obviously, Noah Gurley also chipped in with 23 points, man. So, I mean, anytime you can get three guys, and then Bothwell had 15, 5, and 5 with some huge bucket down the stretch. He shot 7 for 10 from the floor, man. But, I mean, this Furman team is extremely balanced, man. I mean, you can get 15 to 20, 25 points from you know, multiple different guys. I mean, anytime you have a team like that, man, they're extremely dangerous, man. So that was definitely a big win. Mercer's played well to start the season. So that was a big win Furman to be able to get that win. Another big game from this weekend was a weekend series between Liberty and Lipscomb, the two best teams in the Atlantic Sun. I mean, that was a matchup that I had circled on my calendar for a while now. I've been waiting to see that matchup. Those are clearly the best two teams in the conference. And Lipscomb was able to get a split down there in Nashville, Tennessee. They won the first game, I believe, by 6 points. Second game was a little bit of a wider spread. It was Liberty getting the victory in that game. But I think the Atlantic Sun is going to come down to those two teams, man. I mean, I think at this point it is a two-team race in the Atlantic Sun between Liberty and Lipscomb. If I had to pick a team to be the favorite in that league, it would definitely be Liberty. I mean, they're extremely well coached, extremely tough. And that, our guy, which we talked about him last week, man, Darius McGee, he is the real deal, man. I mean, he is so athletic, man. He can get his shot off at any time. He's short. He's only about 5'9", man, but he still manages to get his shot off, you know, whatever he wants, man. And I think he, you know, is really what makes this Liberty team special. Obviously, he's averaging about 15 points a game. But, man, I think they are extremely good defensively as well, man. But Liberty, man, I think they're right now my favorite in the Atlantic Sun. I think Liberty and Lipscomb are going to be the two teams that end up playing for the championship in the Atlantic Sun. Like I said before, if I had to give the edge, I would give the edge to Liberty at this point in time. Another split. I mean, I think the recurring theme in the season, it's going to be extremely hard to sweep weekends in college basketball this year with these back-to-backs. We said this earlier on in the podcast as well, man. I mean, I think when you have back-to-back games at the same site, man, whoever loses that first game is coming back game two with a vengeance, man. So, I mean, it's going to be extremely hard to get two wins. But Western Kentucky and Charlotte was able to get a split in Conference USA. We know how good Western Kentucky is. We've talked about them at length on this podcast, man. For Charlotte to be able to go in there and get a split with them, which was huge for them. So that was a game that definitely had circled on my calendar. And then, of course, we had out of the A-10, St. Bonnie's with a game winner. My guy Kyle Lofton for St. Bonaventure, Putnam Science Academy alum, sinks a three at the buzzer to give them the lead over Richmond. Richmond has now dropped two of their last three games after looking extremely strong start the season. They've now dropped two of their last three. They're going to go up against URI tonight at 6 p.m. So we'll see if they can kind of crack that slide tonight. But still definitely an extremely good team in Richmond. But lost to St. Bonaventure, who was an extremely good team as well. We were talking about them as well a lot on this podcast as being a sleeper in the A-10. So that was a great win for Mark Schmidt's team over Richmond. And then, of course, we had Fordham over Dayton. That was a shocker to me, for them being able to beat Dayton. We're gonna talk a little bit more about that game in the A-10 a little later. Those were the games that stuck out for me over the weekend, Drew.
Sure, man. I think that, you know, that A-10, man, is gonna get tricky because you know, like you mentioned, you know, with obviously Fordham getting that win over Dayton, man, just shows you, man, like obviously Dayton was by far the best team in that conference, you know, last year. And they struggled thus far, you know, losing to LaSalle and Fordham, two teams who are expected to be towards the bottom of the league, man. And, you know, those teams are going to be beating up on each other, man. You know, the St. Bonnie's and the Richmond's, you know, the even like a team like Davidson, man, who a lot of people aren't talking about, but like, that team is capable of beating anybody in the A-10 on any given night, you know. And I think that over the course of the season, man, it's going to be hard when it's time for Selection Sunday and it's time to, you know, I see how many teams the A-10 is going to get in the tournament. It's going to be tough to really have a team to stick out above the rest just because of the fact that they're going to beat up on each other in conference play, man. So, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see how the league shakes out, man. But I want to talk about the MAC a little bit, man. I think in the MAC this weekend, I would say definitely, man, undoubtedly the biggest game this weekend was Siena being able to get two games over Monmouth. We didn't know what Siena was going to look like. You know, obviously with them playing the first two games of the season, a lot of us did not know what they were going to look like coming off quarantine and, you know, coming off just practicing when mainly teams have been playing for weeks. And then we were able to get two games over Monmouth, man. I was able to watch those games. I mean, the first game, I just I feel bad for those guys at Monmouth, man, because I think they had the game won. You know, I think anybody who's watching that game, man, Deion Hammond was playing extremely well from a scoring standpoint, but just could not make a free throw. I believe he was 4-for-11 from the free throw line that game. And he missed 3 key free throws in the last minute, 30 seconds of the game. I'm talking about, like, you know, one-point game, one-possession games, you know, getting fouled and, you know, having to go to the line and convert. You know, when you miss 3 free throws in the last minute and a half, it's going to be hard for your chance to win. Diamond Toley also had a key turnover late in the game that I think also kind of carried over to the next game. He didn't get in until late in the second half. So I know King Rice was probably trying to figure out, you know, the rhythm over there, just trying to figure out, you know, how Donovan and Deion and Shapu and Pappas and all those guys can play together, you know. But I think that from a Monmouth team who definitely feels like they probably should have won that first game, you know, for Sam to be able to get the first game and the second game, I think that just shows, man, that the Saints are a real deal. You know, I think that the question marks can be removed from that team as far as how they're going to be able to bounce back from the quarantine. Right now, they're the only team in the MAC that has, you know, 0 losses outside of Quinnipiac, who has not played yet. You know, but the only team who's played a game and has not lost, even though it's only 2 games, I think that the Saints definitely sent a message to the rest of the MAC that, you know, they're going to be a player. You know, Dylan Pickett obviously had 2 monster games. Manny Camper showed why he's going to be a first-team All-MAC selection this season again, probably just because of his versatility on the way he can score, rebound the ball. So I think, man, the Saints are definitely going to be, you know, a viable threat in the MAC, you know, obviously with a lot of those transfers that they were able to bring in as well. Another shocking outcome for me, at least, in the MAC was Canisius being able to sweep St. Peter's. I think that was definitely surprising, just given the fact that, you know, St. Peter's was 3-1 entering that trip. And, you know, for playing in the MAC, man, obviously, you know that going to Buffalo, whether it's Niagara or Canisius, I mean, it's tough to get 2 wins, to get a win, period, up there. You know, it's tough to even get 1 win. But I think that if I was a betting man, I would have bet that St. Peter's would have been able to get at least 1 and split. So, huge props to Canisius for being able to steal 2, man. And I think that just is going to show, man, that there's going to be a lot of teams in the MAC that are capable of getting a win on any given night. You know, Canisius wasn't a team that answered that weekend series. I'm sure they did, you know, thinking that they can get a sweep. But a lot of people probably thought that, you know, St. Peter's was probably in shape to get at least 1, if not 2, up there. So I think that just shows the depth of the MAC, that there are going to be a lot of teams that might, you know, that are going to be able to get a win over those top teams, whether it be Monmouth, whether it be St. Peter's, you know, even Siena. You know, I think, you know, when they get on the road, you know, history has shown, I think last year they went undefeated at home at Thompson Union Center, but they were much worse on the road. So I think that any MAC team on the road, man, is going to be tough this year. And it's going to be, you know, you're going to have to play their best basketball on the road if you plan on getting even 1 win, you know. I remember Coach Dunleavy used to always say, man, like, you have to win by 10, you know, on the road, like, you know, like, because – you're going to have, like, when you're on the road, you're going to have, you know, the refs, the calls are going to go against you. You know, you might not make a shot, you know, the rims, you can't really control that. So, like, figuratively, you have to win by 10 to win by 1, you know what I'm saying, because you're going to miss shots. You know, the refs aren't going to go against you. You're not going to get any calls, you know what I'm saying. So, to win by 1 on the road, you have to figuratively win by 10. So, I think that's, you know, shout out to Coach Dunley for that one, man, because I think that's proving to be more and more true. You know, truer than ever, I would say. So, you know, also Marist and Iger were able to get a split this weekend, and Fairfield and the Ryder also split in the MAC. So I think that, you know, nothing too surprising there. I think we'll see a lot of splits in a lot of these weekend series, you know. But I think, you know, for the weekend, those are kind of my games that I had the biggest implications, man, you know. But I cannot, you know, end this particular segment without talking about Gonzaga, you know, who is the best team in the country. But, you know, nonetheless, you know, that goes without saying, the best mid-major in the country coming out of the WCC, man. They were able to get a win over San Francisco. And I think the thing that I took the most, you know, from this game, man, was that, you know, Gonzaga was able to win this game pretty convincingly. You know, they won by 23 points. And Jalen Suggs, the consensus top 5 pick in the draft, you know, had 5 points. You know, had 5 points, shot 6 shots. You know, he wasn't really a factor in the game at all. And the Zags still won by 23. You know what I'm saying? Corey Kispert has 26. You know, Joel Yai has 18 and 10. You know, Andrew Nembhard has 14 and 4 off of the bench. You know what I'm saying? And I think that that just speaks to the strength of this team, man. When you have a, you know, a guy who's in the conversation, literally. I mean, Jalen Suggs is in the conversation for the number one pick in the draft. You know, when you can have a guy like that score 5 points and you still win by not one or two, but you win by 23 against a conference opponent, you know, that just tells you, you know, how strong the Zags are, man. So that goes without saying. You know, I think that they're definitely going to be, like I said, man, I don't really see that team losing, man. I don't really know how you beat that team.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think, and even more than that, I mean, you have a number one pick in the draft because debatably, and Jalen Suggs. I mean, he's probably not even the best player on his team. I mean, you have Drew Timmy, who's – they legitimately have three guys that can make first team – that can be first team All-Americans. I mean, Jalen Suggs, Corey Kispert, that we didn't score, averaging 21 a game. And people know about – nobody really talks about him. I mean, he's going to be a first team All-American. If he ends up leading that team in scoring, he's going to be a first team All-American. You know, I think he was a preseason first team All-American before the year started. You know, obviously you have Drew Timmy, who's going to be there as well, and Jalen Suggs. I mean, that team is just – unbelievable. I mean, it's really kind of crazy how good they are. We're going to talk a little bit about them. They have a huge matchup this weekend against BYU that we're going to talk about a little later in the show. But I want to back up a little bit to the MAC and specifically to that Monmouth and Siena series. Monmouth is going to have to figure out a way to rein in Donovan Toley because, I mean, he's their best player, but he's their best playmaker. Like, as far as getting his stuff off the bounce, creating for himself. I mean, this dude played 10 minutes and got up 7 shots. I mean, he shot the second most shots on the team. I mean, Deion Hammond shot 10 and Pappas shot 10. Other than that, he shot 7 shots. Nobody else. I mean, you have a couple people that shot 6, but I mean, he only played 10 minutes, scored 6 points. You know, so it's like he came in and was getting to the rim at will, was getting fouled. I mean, he has to be on the court for them. So King West is going to have to find a way to get to him, to rein him in where he's not taking bad shots, where he's not, you know, turning the ball over because he is a dynamic scorer. They need him on the court. I mean, they need him on the court. And, I mean, that second game, I watched it as well. I mean, there were times where they literally just could not buy a bucket. Like, you have guys that were literally, like, you know, not 9 3-point shooters or that were not necessarily like offensive minded guys, you know, that are trying to make plays, that are trying to do things that necessarily aren't really in the strength of their games, you know. So it's like you need somebody that can make the game easy for those guys. You need somebody that can make the game easy for Nikhil Reddy, for Malik Martin, you know, guys that can get for Marcus McCleary, guys that can get in the paint and you know, get those guys slashing, getting downhill, you know, say, obviously Deion Hammond, you know, he can create his own shot. George Pappas, I want to make sure I talk about George Pappas. This dude is a problem. I mean, this dude, I don't think he gets enough credit for just how good of a season he's had. I mean, he's averaging 15 points a game this season, shooting 48% from three, 52% from the floor. I mean, I think they need to get him a little bit more involved as well. I mean, he shoots 6 for 10, you know, versus Siena. I was talking to my guy, Andrew Canavos, there the other day, and we were talking. I mean, this dude, there were times in the first half where he would come down, get his own bucket in transition. I'm like, yo, why is he not getting more shots? Like, he would go 5, 6, 7 minutes without shooting the ball. I mean, he's shooting 50-some percent from the floor, almost 50 from three, and averaging 15 points a game. I think they need to get him more involved. Mama is a good team, man, and Mama should have definitely got at least one of those games against Siena this weekend. So I think that's going to be a key for them, just trying to find a way to get Donovan Toley involved, trying to find a way to get George Pappas more involved. I think, you know, they'll find a way to figure that out, man. But Canisius definitely was a surprising result. Sweeping St. Peter's, we're going to find out a lot about them as they're playing Siena this weekend. They're going to take a trip up to Albany and play Siena for 2 games. So, you know, if Siena comes out of that 4-0, I think we're going to be having a completely different conversation about them. I mean, I think at the beginning of the year, they were obviously picked first, but, you know, after having not seen them, having them not play, if they're able to start the MAC season 4-0, you know, with 2 wins over Monmouth and 2 over Canisius, I think that would be a huge statement to the league. But I also want to talk about the A-10, man. We touched on it a little bit earlier. The A-10 is in some trouble, man. I mean, I think when you talk about the strength of the league, you know, they only had 2 teams in the top 50. That was St. Louis and VCU. And I think, you know, when it comes down to Selection Sunday, you know, the A-10 is always a league where you're asking yourself, oh, are they going to get 1 team? Is it going to be 2? Is it going to be 3? And at the beginning of the year, I was thinking the A-10 could definitely get, you know, 3, maybe even 4 teams in this year. But if your top teams, a team like a Dayton is losing to teams like Fordham and teams like LaSalle, that is going to hurt the strength of the league. It's going to hurt the league on Selection Sunday, you know, because you can't have that. You know, I think right now, if things are going to continue, it's still early. It's still extremely early, so I want to preface that by saying, but I mean, I think VCU obviously is in a good place right now. If things were to continue the way they're going, they could be in competition for an at-large. And then, of course, St. Louis, they're currently on pause. We haven't even seen them play an A-10 game yet because they're battling COVID-19. So we're waiting on them to get back on the floor. Their next scheduled game is going to be January 15th versus Davidson, which will tell us a lot about that team. But I think St. Louis and VCU are right now the two teams that I can see getting at-large bids. I mean, you talk about a team like Richmond. I mean, everybody was extremely high on them to start the year because of that victory at Kentucky. But obviously that Kentucky win is not looking very good anymore, as Kentucky has really struggled throughout the course of this season. So, you know, you take that one away, their best wins at this point are Northern Iowa by 10. Northern Iowa is really struggling. They're like 2-7. We thought they were going to be a lot better coming into this year. They got picked toward the top of the Missouri Valley. They've really struggled. They have a victory over Wofford by 5 points, which is going to, I think, as the season goes on, I mean, people who know basketball know Wofford is a great program. I mean, they beat Loyola Chicago, which could end up being a really good win for them if they end up coming out of the Missouri Valley. Then they have a win over Davidson and a win over Vanderbilt as well. But Vanderbilt obviously is going to be a bottom of the SEC team. So I think Richmond is going to have to have some work to do. I mean, obviously it starts tonight. They're playing URI. URI is another team that's been kind of, you know, that has been in the conversation for some at-large bids over the past few years. But they're at 5-5 now. I think they've kind of played themselves out of that, you know, at-large bid conversation. So I think the A-10 has some work to do, man. I think right now you're looking at potentially a 1 or 2 bid league right now out of the A-10, unless, you know, teams start to separate themselves and you get some separation at the top toward the rest of the team. But if we keep seeing what we've been seeing, which is, you know, everybody's beating up on each other, you're going to have teams with, you know, 8, 9, 10 losses, and you're not getting an A-10 team at an at-large bid if they have 10 losses. So, I mean, I think that's going to be something to watch as we head towards Selection Sunday. Mentioned a little bit just now that the net rankings that came out, so I definitely want to talk about those. There were 9 mid-majors in that net ranking initially. After you had Gonzaga, which we're calling a mid-major, of course, they came in number 1 in the net ranking. No surprise to no one. St. Louis came in at 12. Boise State, a surprising team out of the Mountain West Conference, is at 13. Colgate, this is my biggest surprise, out of the Patriot League, is at 16th. In the net rankings, they're 1-1. It's not a team that was obviously the Patriot League just started playing games. Their first victory came by 41 points in a win over Army. So that's probably an indication of why that is. You know, Army's a good team, but then they lost to Army the next night, so they end up getting a split with Army. They still come in at number 16 on the first edition of the net rankings. Drake is at 20. I think they should be a lot higher. They're at 13-0. We'll talk about a little bit about them in a second. VCU's 31, Winthrop 39, Colorado State 40, San Diego State 41, and then Furman comes in at 53 out of the SoCon. You know how I feel about them. But I definitely want to talk about this Winthrop team, man. They're at 39 right now. They're the best team in the Big South. They are undefeated. I got to see them this weekend. They swept Charleston Southern on the road, so that was a huge win for that team, man. But Winthrop, the team that's sitting currently at 9-0, and one of those wins is against Furman. I mean, they beat Furman very convincingly. They beat him, you know, by 16 points. So it wasn't like they barely beat him. I mean, they really handled Furman when they played him. And after we know how much respect Furman gets on this show and in the eyes of college basketball, man, Winthrop beat those guys by 16 points. So they're undefeated in the Big South right now. Man, I think they're going to be a team to circle on your brackets as we head towards Selection Sunday, man. If they end up getting into the tournament, which I believe they will, I mean, I think they're the best team in the Big South. I think it's them, you know, and then everyone else, honestly, right now at this point. They're 6-0 in the league. Radford's out to a 5-1 start in the Big South. So they're always going to be there. Mike Jones is extremely great coach over there at Radford. So we definitely want to give those guys his props. But it's looking like Winthrop, man, is the best team in the Big South right now. They're playing extremely well right now, have yet to lose. And then Colorado State came in at 40. and then San Diego State at 41. So I think the net ranking, I mean, obviously you can't put too much stock into these the first edition of these net rankings just because of the fact that it is so early. It's not really clear as to, you know, the criteria that they look at. I mean, Jeff Bordello came out and said they changed the net. So he said, remember, the NCAA changed the net formula in the spring to include just two factors, the team value index and adjusted efficiency. So winning percentage, adjusted winning percentage, and scoring margin are no longer factors. So I don't know what team value index is. That's one of those subjective matrix that I guess NCAA has come up with. So I guess, you know, we'll, as the season goes on, we'll get a clear idea, you know, once these teams have played more games, we're going to clear idea exactly what that means. But the first edition of the net rankings were extremely telling, in my opinion. So before I talk about Drake, do you have anything you want to say about the net rankings?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I guess the one thing that's probably an honorable mention for a crazy thing we saw, we're going to get to that a little later in the show, obviously, man, but it's I don't even know the word. It's just shocking to me that you can win by 40 on one night and then lose the very next night. I mean, what happened? Like, they must have said, man, it's about to be sweet out here. And the Army said, no, sir.
I mean, that's
quite the turnaround in one night. I mean, how do you go up 40 to losing the next night?
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, literally, they won the first game 101-57, and then they lost the next game 75-73. So Army must have cracked down on defense. I mean, they allowed a 101 the first night, and they only allowed 73. So that was really the story of the two games. But I mean, as you said earlier, man, it's going to be extremely hard to sweep weekends in college basketball. I mean, I don't know how. I mean, it's crazy. They won by 40. I mean, they won by 40 literally. 101-57, and then
coming supposed to be in the parking lot doing burpees and doing drills and up all night next after that game, it probably wouldn't have minded the shape.
Nah, for sure. I mean, I don't know any other explanation. I mean, literally the only team to go 2-0 in the Patriot League was Navy. They got off to a 2-0 start. Literally every other team is 1-1 in the Patriot League. So, I mean, that league is probably going to have a lot of parity. We're going to talk a little bit about another game in that league this weekend, so I don't want to jump the gun. But I definitely want to talk about Drake, man. I mean, we talked about them a little earlier. They are 13-0. I mean, that is not getting enough attention, in my opinion, nationally. They're 13-0. They just swept Southern Illinois. We talked a lot about them last week. That's a good team. I mean, they beat them, you know, pretty handily. They beat them by over 20 points. Then they beat them by 18. Then they beat them by about 23 or 24 the following night. I mean, that margin of victory – over a good Southern Illinois team. Like, this is not a – Southern Illinois has some good wins on the season. They're you know, 7-3 team. And for Drake to handle them, they beat them by 21-18. So, I mean, for Drake to handle them like that was extremely, extremely – I mean, it's great for them. I mean, they are extremely good offensive team. I mean, their leading scorer, Shaquan Hemphill, he only plays 25 minutes a game, and he's the leading – I mean, he had played the most minutes on their team at 25 minutes a game. He averages 14 points a game. They've only got three guys double figures, but they average 84 points a game. I mean, their top five scorers are all shooting better than 51% from the floor, and the team is shooting 53.5% from the floor, and they're shooting 43% from three, and they average 84 points a game. So they're an extremely, extremely efficient offensive team. They're extremely hard to guard. Like I said before, that they only have three guys that are, they're averaging double figures, but, I mean, they have 14, 12, 11, 9, 8, 7, 6, 4, 3, 3. I mean, like, they have a lot of guys that are contributing. I mean, they have – 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys playing double figure minutes. Like I said, their top five scorers are all shooting above 50% from the floor. So that is an extremely hard team to slow down. They're playing well at the right time. I think we're going to see a lot. We're going to be able to tell a lot about them this weekend as they go up against Loyola Chicago. I will definitely be tuned in to that series this weekend as they take on Loyola Chicago. So one thing I want to point out, man, Drake 13-0 is definitely an underrated team right now. They came in at number 20 in the net ranking, so the committee is definitely giving them some respect early on.
Not for sure, man. Definitely, man. Shout out to Drake. Shout out to the Missouri Valley Conference, man. That's definitely a big time for that league, man. But, you know, without further ado, I want to get you guys over to this interview with Speedy Claxton, who is one of the coaches over at Hofstra out of the CAA, man. So this is going to be one you guys are going to enjoy, man. So we're going to get you guys over to that ASAP. All righty, guys. All Facts Media here. My name is Andrew Robinson, joined as always by my twin brother, Aaron Robinson. And today, we have a special guest on this episode of the Auto Bid. We have Hofstra men's basketball coach and former NBA veteran, Speedy Claxton. Thanks for joining us today.
No doubt, man. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to this.
Yes, sir. So, Coach, man, obviously, you know, a lot of people might know, you know, about your playing days, man. But, you know, for those who don't, kind of talk us through, you know, just your basketball career, kind of how you got into playing, you know, the college level. And then what brought you into the coaching world today?
Well, you know, I started out as a young punk playing, probably around 10 years old, you know, played Tiny Tots, CYO basketball. But I didn't play too much AAU basketball, but I was still able to go to a very basketball-rich tradition high school in Christ the King in Middle Village, Queens, where I teamed up with the likes of Eric Barkley and Lamar Odom, who was also first-round NBA draft picks themselves. So we had a very good high school team. We was nationally ranked. We was number two in the country when all three of us was there. From there, those two guys got more of the shine that I did. So they were both McDonald's All-Americans, you know, all city, all that type stuff. So I was kind of like the third fiddle on the team. So I kind of got overlooked and under-recruited. So I decided to verbal commit to Hofstra in the fall. And then went on to have a really good senior year. And while I was having that good of a senior year, a lot of the big schools started coming after me and tried to get me to back out of my verbal commitment to Coach Wright, Coach Jay Wright, who's now the Villanova head coach. Yeah. But it was just something in my gut that told me to stick with my decision. And I'm glad I did, because I went on to have a great college career, 4-year starter at Hofstra playing under who's soon to be Hall of Fame coach and Jay Wright. And then went on to get drafted in the first round by the 76ers with the 20th pick. And then went on to have a 10-year NBA career. And it's kind of wild when you think about it, coming from where I came from, no one thought I was going to make it to the NBA. I was always one of the smaller guys on the court. Like I said, I got under-recruited, so nobody really looked at me as an NBA player, but I proved a lot of people wrong, and if I had to do it over again, wouldn't have changed anything I did.
Now, talk about your time, you know, playing for Coach Pop in San Antonio, you know, playing with Tim Duncan and Tony Parker and Manu and all those guys down there in San Antonio when you were down there.
Yeah, my time in San Antonio was amazing, man. You know, when I first got traded there, I didn't know what to expect. I was kind of shocked. You know, it was my first time getting traded, and you know, I'm an East Coast kid. I got drafted. I was born in New York, raised in New York, and then my first stop was in Philly. It was, you know, still East Coast, and now I'm going out Midwest in San Antonio, Texas. I never lived in no Texas. I'm an East Coast boy. So I know what to expect, but when I got there, you know, they welcomed me with open arms. That organization is tremendous. Like, the first day I got there, we played pickup basketball. We had open gym. And then after we finished playing, Tim Duncan was like, "Yo, Speedy, what you doing after we finished playing?" I was like, "I'm not going to just go to the crib and chill." He was like, "Yo, come play paintball with us. A bunch of us go and play paintball." And that was going to be my first time playing paintball. So I was like, you know what, let me go hang out with my teammates. So cool. I said, yeah, let's go. So we went there, you know, rented the guns and whatever. But then I seen Tim and his boys walking with their own guns, their own vests and all. I'm like, oh, y'all play, for real. So we went out on the field. And remember, Tim Duncan is 7 feet now.
Yeah.
I didn't see him the whole game. I'm like, yo, where's this guy at? Starting for the hiding. But you know, I'm shooting my little one pellet at a time. Boom, boom. I peek out. I swear, it felt like they had machine guns over there. I was like, oh, I'm not getting hit with these things. I'm like, nah, no way. But it was so much fun playing with them. I mean, Tim Duncan is a great guy on and off the court. Ginobili the same, Tony Parker. I mean, I think the way we hung out off the court, it made us be a good team because it's just built chemistry and trust amongst each other.
Right. Now, you know, at least from me and casual basketball fans, man, like when you see Tim Duncan, you know, he's very – seems like he's quiet. He doesn't really do anything.
Far from it.
Talk about Tim Duncan, man. Like, what's he like, you know, behind the scenes?
Yo, Tim is – he's a jokester. He's a big jokester. He is not shy. He's not quiet. that is not the truth. When he gets out into like, you know, the world and stuff, that's who he is. But like behind closed doors and in the locker room, man, Tim is a great guy. He's fun. He likes to play jokes on everybody. He's a good dude to be around, man.
Now the other half of the San Antonio Spurs, you know, dynasty was Greg Popovich. I mean, everybody has this perception of Pop and, you know, what he's like and how to play for him. I mean, what was it like playing for Popovich and, you know, what can you remember about, you know, him, you know, like behind closed doors when the cameras weren't rolling, you know, what is he like?
Pop was great, man. He's another one that when he gets in front of the camera, you look at him and he's just like this no, like this strict, like straightforward guy. But then like on the basketball court, like he's just like Tim Duncan. He's playful, like mad cool. Like, I mean, you know, he's gonna define your role from day one, and you're gonna be asked to do exactly what he wants you to do. I think that's why they're so successful. But Pop is cool, man. He's one of the best coaches that I ever got a chance to play for, and I owe him a lot, man.
Now that series in that finals, when you guys were able to beat the Nets, man, kind of talk about just that season, that journey, and what it was like to be able to just culminate in a championship.
I mean, you know, it was a dream come true. You know, growing up, watching the finals, you know, watching Magic Johnson, watching Michael Jordan, Isaiah Thomas, all these cats, and then actually getting to play in the NBA finals, it was like so surreal. I'm like this. It's not until after I retired and I look back and I really says to myself like, wow, you really got to play in the NBA championship. Like this, that's insane. And not just be there, but to actually be on the court and be a contributor. I mean, I will never forget that. But like, I mean, that was an unbelievable moment, man. It's just, I wish everybody got a chance to experience that because it's truly amazing.
Now, I want to pivot a little bit to you guys now over at Hofstra. You guys are having a good season. You guys were picked, you know, first in the CAA. You guys were picked to repeat, obviously coming off last year when we guys won the CAA championship. I mean, talk about the expectations for you guys' team this year and how you guys are handling them thus far.
Yeah, we got picked to win the league. But, you know, that's just the coach's poll. Now we got to – Coach Mihaly will always say you got to either prove them right or you got to prove them wrong. This time we got to prove them right. They picked us to win the league, and we have our first game tomorrow against William & Mary. We just got to go out there and play hard and compete and be the leaders of the pack from day one.
Now, you guys were able to get a big-time win over Richmond the other day, a team that was ranked in the top 25, another great mid-major program. Talk about, you know, what that win meant for your program to kind of, you know, put everybody on notice that Hofstra is also a legit mid-major.
Oh, that was amazing. I mean, it was the first time that we've ever beat a nationally ranked team. So it was definitely we'll go down in history books for us. We definitely caught them at the right time. You know, right before that Christmas break, they was ready to go. I feel like they were all ready to go home, and we knew that. It's a trap game. We was like, you know what? These guys are ready to go home. They're at home. They got their last game before the break at home. They're out of here right after that. We still got a long bus ride back. Yo, let's do something special before we start our break. And we did it.
Now, you guys have three of the best players in the league. I mean, talk about, you know, how important those three guys are. Two guys said, obviously, last year, you guys had five starters that averaged double figures. You guys got three of them back this year. I mean, talk about those guys and the importance of them to your team.
I mean, they're huge. We need those three guys to be consistent in order for us to win every night. And each of them are stepping into different roles than they were in last year. But they've all succeeded expectations, and they just got to continue to grow as the season goes along. And I think if they do that, we'll be straight.
Now, I'm kind of, you know, going off of that, you know, we got, you know, right now you guys have Jalen Ray averaging 19 a game, Tariq Coleman at 18, and Isaac Conte averaging double-double with 13-7. I mean, not a lot of teams have that kind of firepower, man. I mean, talk about, you know, that and just, you know, how that kind of separates you guys from a lot of teams.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to have all three of those guys being high double-digit scores because somebody might have an off night, and hopefully the other two will pick that guy up. So it's very important. It's good that they're all upperclassmen. They know what they expect from us. We know what we need from them. And so far, they've been handling it. They've been handling their business.
Now, last year, you guys had obviously Desiree Bowie and Elijah Perriman, and both of those guys averaged, you know, 18 plus points per game. Now, this year, you guys again have, you know, multiple guys, you know, up there in that 17, 18. Point per game. I mean, talk about how you guys have been able to kind of have multiple guys contribute. You know, is this something that about your offense that allows multiple guys to be successful?
I mean, I think it's a credit to our development. I think we really place a lot of play development, you know, from the start of the year to when these guys are freshmen and they grow as players. They're always getting into the gym on their own and with us. And, I mean, you know, as they get older, you see it. You see the transition onto the court.
I mean, and even before that, with a guy like Justin Wright Foreman, who was also able to, you know, get drafted into the league, you know, from Austin, man. Talk about what he was
every,
like.
Every year somebody else, man. Every year somebody steps up into that next spot, man. Hopefully it keeps going. I mean, that means we're doing a great job of developing our younger players. But yeah, Justin, I mean, he was a surprise also. I mean, he went from averaging 1 point his freshman year, scoring a total of 44 points his whole freshman year, to averaging 23 his senior year and getting drafted in the second round by Utah. You don't see that too often, but it's a credit to him. He really was a hard worker. Like, he knew where he wanted to go, and he made sure he put into hard work to get there.
Now, you mentioned earlier you guys have your first weekend series against William and Mary tomorrow and Wednesday?
Sunday.
Yep, tomorrow and Sunday. What are you guys doing to prepare for William and Mary? I mean, obviously, they're a team. Last year, you know, they lose Nate the Knight. They were picked, I believe, 10th in the CAA this year. But what are you guys going to have to do to go in there and try to get that weekend sweep?
Well, first of all, we can't look at their preseason pick. That's out the door. I mean, we know once we get into conference play, anybody could beat anybody. I mean, they beat us by, I think, 30 points in our first game against them last year. And with them losing Nathan Knight, just like other guys on our team stepped up, they're going to have guys on their team that steps up. And we got to be ready for that. They have a really good guard in Luke Lowy, who is – first team all defense last year, so he's going to try to make it a nightmare for Jalen Ray.
Now, you know, for you guys, obviously, being in the CAA, man, the CAA is one of the strongest mid-major conferences on the East Coast, and I mean, I think a lot of people don't really realize that. Can I talk about the strength of you guys' league, just for the people who may not really know about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good league. I mean, I think it's really slept on. We've been producing pros the last couple of years, and not just Justin Wright Foreman. Joe Chile got drafted by Charlotte. Then Justin got drafted. Then this past year, actually, Justin got drafted with Brantley.
Yep,
from Charleston. And then this past year, Nathan Knight is over playing with Atlanta Hawks. Grant Rillis got drafted by Charlotte, and then Nate Dolans with Charlotte also. So this league is this league is not just producing pros. We are producing NBA players. So the scouts definitely come to this league, and they actually a bunch of them call me at the beginning of the year and find out who should they be looking at within the league.
Now, obviously, now we're in a unique time with COVID-19. You know, guys are, you know, going on pause and not going on pause. You know, thankfully, you guys, knock on wood, have not had to go on pause yet. Only had one game canceled, that first one. Mom, I mean, how have you guys been kind of dealing with COVID? And, you know, what specifically in your program have you guys done to kind of avoid the shutdown so far?
We've been preaching safety to these kids. We kind of created our own little bubble, and we don't allow them outside that bubble. We get them food. We created a lounge space for them within the arena where they go kind of hang out and watch games and eat and kind of just be around each other. And to their credit, I mean, they want to play basketball, and we told them from the start, if you want to play basketball, this is what you need to do. And they've been great with it, man. Hopefully they can continue it.
Now, you guys are without your head coach. Obviously, you know, you guys have an interim head coach right now. Kind of talk about how you guys have been able to transition and kind of keeping things going at a high level.
Well, Coach Mahaly, he did a good job of preparing us for a day when we would take over the program. Like you said, Mike Farrelly is the acting head coach. He's done a terrific job in stepping in place of Coach Mahaly while he's on leave. But these guys, it's really the kids, man. They believe in what we're preaching, and they allow us to coach them, and they're giving us 110%.
Now, going back to your playing days, I mean, when you were you played at Hofstra, I mean, you know, what does it mean for you to be able to come full circle? I mean, from a guy who played at the school to now a guy who's, you know, coaching at his alma mater.
Man, it's amazing. I mean, you know, this was my plan once I decided to commit to Hofstra way back when in 2000. I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go somewhere where I'm gonna be able to hopefully come back one day after I finish playing and coach them, and it's happening. I mean, that was my plan, and it's going accordingly.
Now, kind of taking a rewind a little bit to last season, man. You guys were able to win the CAA, but obviously the NCAA tournament was canceled, man. So kind of talk about, you know, how disappointing kind of that was to not really be able to get to the NCAA tournament and play in that, and kind of, you know, how you guys have been able to kind of use that, you know, going into this season.
Yeah, it sucked big time. I mean, you know, you went from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows. One night, you did win a championship thinking you're going to the NCAA championship. March Madness, you're dancing, you're going to come home, you're going to have a party, you know, get that campus love. And then 2 days later, everything's gone, just like that. And then this whole COVID situation becomes bigger than you originally thought. And, you know, while I was at the tournament, we was all talking about, oh, maybe they'll cancel the tournament and they'll make the person who won the regular season go to the tournament. You know, Joe just joking around.
Yeah.
But then once we won it and then they canceled it, it really got real. And then this whole COVID thing became a national crisis. And it sucked for these kids. You know, being at a mid-major program, you don't get to go to the tournament like that every year.
Yeah,
that just doesn't happen. So it took us a long time. It's been 20 years since Hofstra been back there, and it kind of just sucked that we couldn't complete, you know, the ground.
Now you got to play in the NCAA tournament at Hofstra. I mean, talk about what that moment meant for you. I mean, you guys won back when they were in the America East. So I mean, talk about what that moment meant for you to be able to go to the tournament playing at Hofstra.
Yeah, it was an amazing moment. That's why I wish these kids would have got a chance to experience that, because I know how special it is to get there from a mid-major. And these kids work so hard. You know, each and every year we got closer and closer to the dream. And in DeJuan Bui and Eliza Primus last year, who were two guys who were really vital to our success the last couple of years. They got over the hurdle and got there, but they didn't really get a chance to fully experience it. It really sucked for them. But, you know, it was amazing for me to get this. I just wanted them to experience all the love that comes with it.
Now, man, it's really crazy to think that, you know, back in the America East, man, you know, you were able to get drafted in the first round from the America East. I think about that now, like most guys that get drafted from small schools, you know, from the Ohio Valley, like the Murray State, you know, from the Mountain West with the Kauai and Fresno State, Paul George, like, you know, thinking back, like, dang, you know, I was really able to get drafted first round out of the America East. Like,
when you say that now, it's like this, wow. That was crazy. I mean, not too many guys are getting drafted from the America East, which means I was definitely doing my numbers.
50. Oh, man. But, like, also, man, like, you know, thing is about the kind of progression of, you know, even like you mentioned earlier with Jay Wright, you know, coaching you guys at Hofstra and then, you know, seeing kind of where he's at now with Villanova and winning two national championships, man, what is that like for you?
It's mind-blowing. It is absolutely mind-blowing. You know, to see Coach Wright and all the success that he's had, it's crazy to see him in that light now where he's kind of like a celebrity coach. Like, he's talked about in the same breath as the Coach K's, the Calipari's, and it's wild to see because I'm used to knowing him as the Hofstra head coach. Yeah. And here he is. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. And it's crazy because we actually was talking about this the other day, him and I. And I was like, it's crazy to see. It's crazy that I played for a Hall of Fame coach. And he was like, nah, what's even crazier is that you made this Hall of Fame coach. So it's definitely mutual respect that we have for each other.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, Drew and I played at Quinnipiac, which, you know, over there with Baker Dunleavy, who coached at Villanova and played at Villanova. And so Quinnipiac is essentially like a mini Nova in a way with the attitude and, you know, everything the way that they try to run their program. I mean, so when I think of Jay Wright, you know, I mean, when I used to see Coach Dunleavy, it was like he was almost like a mini Jay Wright, you know. So seeing him, you know, operate, you know, in that manner. And then we'll talk to other guys that play that Villanova and they'll say, oh yeah, like we do this and that. And it's the same way. I mean, was it that same way back then? I mean, was he still, you know, I guess running it the same way that he did?
Once you find success, it's like, well, why change?
Right.
So we had like the attitude points and all that type of stuff.
Man, that's crazy.
It started with us.
Wow.
It started with us. And, you know, we used to have an attitude winner every day. And guys loved it and got after it. And everybody wanted to be the attitude winner. And I really think I played the hardest. And usually if you played the hardest, you're going to win the attitude point. And I swore I played the hardest. I'm like this. There's no way that I don't win it every day. Like, this is crazy. You guys just don't want me to win it. I refuse it.
Nah, yo, man, that's crazy, man. 20 years, man. Some things never change, man.
Some things never change. I mean, but he's had success with it, so why change it, man?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, he got the recipe for a winner.
Yep. Now, you know, I think it'll be a wasted moment, you know, if we didn't talk about, you know, obviously with your era in the NBA, man, you were able to play against, you know, the late great Kobe Bryant. Kind of what was that like, man, just playing against Kobe? If you have any, you know, stories or matchups or like just thinking back playing against him in your time in the league.
Well, if you ask me, I think that was the best era of the NBA.
Spicy.
Yeah, guys are better now. But we were more skilled, and we were allowed to play defense. So it was harder to score back then. Like, if you was a scorer back then, you could really score the basketball because the game was way more physical. I mean, I think the numbers are so inflated now. Like, I swear these guys get 40 points like it's nothing.
Man.
Like, it's multiple guys that you'll be like, oh, he had 44, he had 36, he had 45. It's like, oh my God, these numbers are crazy. But the game is a little softer now. So I think the 2000 era is the best era of the NBA. And Kobe being the pinnacle of that. He was unbelievable. Greatest competitor. I mean, he didn't want to lose any game, any drill, nothing. Like, this was his job, and he definitely approached it as such. Like, he was always the first or last one in the gym. From what one of my close teammates, my high school teammate, Lamar Odom, he played a lot with Kobe. He played with Kobe, so he used to tell me stories about him and how much of a hard worker he is. He said, yo, he's a nympho for this basketball stuff.
So, I mean, it's interesting you say that, I mean, as you should, that your era, you know, was the best era, you know, in NBA basketball. So, I mean, I guess, does that mean that you think Jordan's better than LeBron? Are you a LeBron guy? I mean, where do you fall on that side of the debate?
I think Jordan was the best scorer ever. LeBron is probably the best player because LeBron does more for his team. He gets people involved. He's a better defender than Michael was. He can guard multiple positions. So I would say MJ's a better scorer. LeBron's the better player.
Mm-hmm. So
I like that.
Where does Kobe fall in this equation?
Kobe's third, man. Kobe's third. Kobe's a mix. Like, he's a great scorer like Jordan. He could guard multiple positions and make the game easier for other people like LeBron, but LeBron's bigger. So LeBron can guard a five man. LeBron is seriously, he can legit guard 1-5. I know you hear a lot of people say that, but that's not true. But for LeBron, it is true. He could legit guard a point guard, or he could guard a center.
Yeah. So for you, man, if you had to think back on your 10-year career, man, like, who was the hardest person you had to guard? Or maybe some guy who, like, gave you fits when you matched up, or, like, somebody who you like, damn, that dude just...
I would say the late, great Kobe Bryant. Because when I was in New Orleans, Chris Paul, CP3, and I played a lot together. So I would have to guard the two guards. So that means I was guarding the Kobe Bryants, the Dwayne Wades, the Ray Allens. And Kobe was definitely the hardest to guard. I remember when we was going through walkthrough, the first time we had to play against the Lakers. And this was before I knew I was going to be guarding the two guards. And then B. Scott, who was the coach at the time, he was like, all right, so this is how we're going to guard when Speedy's on Kobe. I was like, this, who? I was like, whoa. And then I looked at CP and he kind of smirked like, yo, dog, I got you. We come in double on the catch. I was like, yo, I told him, yo, don't be late. I said, we are going on the catch. Not on the pass, on the catch.
Need that. Hey, now, Coach, man, like me, you know, me and Aaron, like, we're DC guys, man. Like, we born and raised in DMV area, so we're big time DMV hoop guys, man.
I remember watching you guys playing AAU. I was coaching back then.
Yes, sir. Man, did you match up against Gilbert Arenas with the Wizards? Did
that? Yo, it was tough, man. Super, super, super tough. I don't think he gets the credit that he deserved. Like, at his high time in the NBA, he was legit the hardest point guard to guard. Like, you knew when you was going against Gilbert, you was going to have to get your night rest the night before. I mean, he was a bigger guard. He could shoot the hell out the basketball. He was fast. He was athletic. He had a great IQ. I mean, he really had no weakness. But he was tough. But, you know, towards the end of his career, he was doing dumb stuff off the court, and I think it kind of messed up his image. But he was tough, man. Super tough.
Yeah. Now, you being a New York guy, man, we had Sha Holloway on here on our podcast not too long ago. We asked him, you know, who are his favorite guards to come out of the New York area in his time? Obviously, there's so many to get to.
Yeah.
But in your era, who do you think were the top guys out of New York, around the time that you were playing?
The top guys was myself. It was actually Sha. Ed Coder, who went to North Carolina. Kevin Morris, who went to Georgia Tech. Eric Barkley, who went to St. John's, who was actually my high school teammate as well, but he played for Riverside and AAU, so we had to match up against each other. So those are the and Allen Griffin, who went to Syracuse. Those are some of the tougher guards during my era. And, well, I made a mistake. I forgot the god. I forgot the god of all gods is Stephon Marbury. Mr. Marbury. I don't know how I could forget him because he treated me and Eric Barkley like we were little boys when we played against him.
Nah, yeah, Marbury was definitely tough, man. I don't know, like I said, man, me and Aiden, we always advocate for our DMV area, man. So I'm gonna always say that, you know, DMV got the best hoops, man. That definitely got the guy.
I like the DMV area, man, especially now. Like, there's some serious hoopers out there. Like, I definitely gotta break into that area to start recruiting.
Hey, man, like, hey, look, give us a call, man. We'll give you the inside scoop on where you need to go, man.
Gotcha.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, that's the last question that I have for you, man. If Ace had any other questions, man, for Speedy?
Nah, that was it for me as well.
All right, man. It was fun, man. Glad that I jumped on with you guys. And good luck with you guys' podcast.
All righty, guys. That was Speedy Claxton of Hofstra Men's Basketball, man. Definitely, man, want to give him a big shout-out, man, and a big thanks, man. Just – yo, how cool is that, man, to have a coach, man, on the roster that's, you know, won a championship with Tim Duncan, Manu, and Tony Parker? I mean, that's nuts.
Yeah, I think it's probably most when you're talking about Tim Duncan, man. I mean, that guy seems like he's the most quietest, like, awkwardest dude ever, you know? I mean, for him to say that he's a jokester and he always is playing around, that was really surprising, man. I can't even really – you know, picture him being that type of guy. But, I mean, I'm sure everybody has, you know, the things that they like to keep private, you know what I'm saying? So, but, I mean, yeah, man, that is awesome. I mean, obviously, you, me and you played for Juan Dixon last year at University of Maryland, who, you know, was an NBA player and played with Michael Jordan and, you know, won a national championship at Maryland, you know, was one of the best college players of all time, you know, had one of the best college careers of all time. I just remember, you know, I always wanted to ask him questions and, you know, get all the stories of, you know, what really goes on in the NBA. So, I mean, I know those guys are probably doing the same thing to Speedy, especially having, you know, him having played for one of the best dynasties in the history of the NBA with that Spurs dynasty. I mean, that's extremely cool, man. So, I mean, I know those guys over there are probably soaking him up like a sponge and learning as much from him as they possibly can.
Not for sure, man. Even going back to, you know, the Quinnipiac days, man, with Scott Burrell, you know, even though we didn't get to play for him, man, you know, getting recruited by Coach Burrell and being able to maintain a relationship, you know, with Coach Burrell when he went to Southern right up the street, man, was crazy, man. Just, you know, having him tell us stories about Jordan for all them years and then, you know, For this whole Last Dance thing to come out, man. So, by the way, if you guys have not checked out our interview with Scott Burrell on The Last Dance, make sure you go over to YouTube and stream that now, man. We had him, Dickie Simpkins on there, man, two members of that Last Dance Chicago Bulls team. Some great, great stories on that one, you know. But, you know, getting back to this Hofstra team, man, I think, you know, they have a chance to really, really be great in the CA this year, man. I think, you know, they have three guys, you know, that are averaging double figures. Obviously, Isaac Conte, he's averaging a double-double, you know, 13 points, 11 rebounds. You know, Jalen Ray and Tariq Coburn are both averaging, you know, over 17 points a game, man. And, you know, like we mentioned in the interview, man, being able to have guys, you know, that just every year, man, from – you know, back when, you know, Justin Wright Foreman got drafted and then being able to follow that with, you know, Elijah Pemberton and DeJure Bowie, you know, and then now you got Jalen Ray and Tariq Coburn, man, and along with Isaac Conte. I mean, those guys have a lot of firepower over at Hofstra, man. And I think that, you know, they started 2-0. You know, they have a big-time game against Northeastern that's coming up in the CAA. It was going to be, you know, a matchup of two CAA champions, the last two teams to win it. You know, we're going to obviously get you guys a little bit more info on that game. But I think that that's going to be a big-time test, you know, for Hofstra being able to go up against a team of that caliber in Northeastern who also has championship pedigree. But, you know, I think Hofstra is a team that, you know, because of their depth and because of their ability to have multiple guys who can really put the ball in the basket, I think that that's going to really be able to separate them, you know, when it comes time for, you know, for the conference tournament.
Yeah, you know, for sure. I mean, this series is going to tell us a lot about Hofstra and about Northeastern because, I mean, they're both, you know, 2-0 in the CAA, only two undefeated teams who have played. Obviously, Drexel hasn't played yet. University of Wilmington has not played yet. And Towson and JMU have not played conference games yet. But other teams that have played, both of these guys are 2-0. So those are the early, you know, two favorites in the CAA. Obviously, like you said before, Northeastern and Hofstra haven't been the last two CAA champions. That game is going to be huge. for them to kind of prove, who's the big dog, who's the best team in the CAA. But, I mean, I think it's interesting that they're going to do actually a home-and-home this weekend. So the first game is going to be Thursday night at 5 o'clock. And that game is going to be at Hofstra. And then they're going to play again on Saturday at noon. That game is going to be at Northeastern. So it's going to be a little bit of a different look. I mean, obviously, the most of the games throughout college basketball were home and home series, but obviously because those two teams are a little bit closer to each other, like upstate New York and then the Boston area, they can get to each other. So they're going to do a home and home series. That's something that I wish a lot more schools would do in this whole coronavirus time, is, especially with a conference like the MAC, who we talk about all the time, man. I mean, you have teams that are literally less than an hour away. I mean, like, why can't Fairfield and Quinnipiac play one game at Fairfield, one game at Quinnipiac? Why can't Iona Manhattan play one game at Iona, one game at Manhattan? You know, teams in Jersey, the same way. Or even St. Peter's, if St. Peter's is playing Manhattan or St. Peter's is playing Iona, you can get there in literally under an hour. So it's like, Niagara Canisius, like, why are we playing two games, when you can do something like Hofstra in Northeastern, play one game here on one day, the next game here the next day. It's not like you're traveling, an astronomical distance. So, Jim Daly, mentioned that as well last week. I think that is an amazing point. I wish we would see more teams, do that, because it's the fact that you have to play the same team on consecutive days, or this case is a day in between, but to play the same team back to back is a challenge in and of itself. So you're telling me I have to play the same team and I have to play the same team at the same place twice in a row. Like, if I'm the road team, that puts me at an incredible disadvantage, So it's like, whereas if it was a home and home, then it would be a lot easier. Obviously, for teams where the league is spread out, like even the CAA, you have teams in New York and teams in, Boston, but you also have teams in North Carolina, South Carolina. So obviously those games are harder, but I like that the CAA did this for Hofstra and Northeastern, being that they are close. Let's get a home and home. And battle it out that way.
No, for sure, man. And like one thing that I wanted to talk about a little bit more, man, that that we talked about with Speedy was the strength of the CAA, man. I think that, like, let's talk about it. I mean, like, the CAA is a league that over the last 2 years has had three players drafted into the NBA. I'm talking about like selected name called on draft night, and Justin Wright Foreman and Jarrell Brantley, both getting drafted, to the Utah Jazz. And then this year, Grant Riller getting drafted to the Charlotte Hornets. This is a team that's putting guys in the NBA, man. It has NBA players. If you look at we got guys like Kent Bazemore, who played at Old Dominion when they were in the CAA. Damian Lee, who played at Drexel. Obviously, we know he got that from Louisville and like that, but, he spent 4 years at Drexel, playing in the NBA right now. I remember a guy, another DMV name for you guys, man, Marcus Thornton, who got drafted out of William & Mary to the Boston Celtics. These are all guys who have been drafted to the league out of the CAA. I'm not talking about, like, Exhibit 10 tour, like, draft night, their names were called. I think it just speaks to the talent, that's come out of this league, man. And forgive me if I've missed anybody who's been, drafted out of this league, man. But those are the greatest guys that have came to my mind recently. I think that, this league has had a tremendous amount of talent. I mean, anytime you got, a school, like College of Charleston, man, who had guys drafted in back-to-back years, that's crazy that, this time last year, or I guess 2 years ago, they had two NBA players on their team at one time, in the CAA, a mid-major conference, man. I mean, that just says a lot about the trend of the league, man. Coach also mentioned Nate Darling, who's on a two-way right now with the Charlotte Hornets, another DMV guy, the matter of the product. The CAA is a legit league, man. I don't think there's too many leagues around the country, that can say they've had as many guys, drafted from a mid-major league. I know the OVC, obviously, with John Morant, and what's my guy's name from Belmont that got drafted to, I think, the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Dylan Windler.
Yep, so, I mean, I know the OVC had some first-round draft picks. So definitely want to get them some love as well, man. I mean, but the CAA is slept on, man. I think that this is, a very strong league, man, and a league that, again, is going to be, is going to have a team. Whoever wins that league, man, whether it's Hofstra or Northeastern, whether it's, the field, I think it's going to be a team who could compete in the NCAA tournament and potentially, get a win.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you mentioned Nate Darling. Also, Nathan Knight played at William & Mary. He's with the Hawks now. I mean, that league has produced at the highest level as far as talent goes, man. I mean, I can't think of, like you said, I can't think of another major league. I think the OVC would probably be the only one that would be close with all those guys from Murray State, you know, Cameron Payne, Isaiah Cannon, John Morant. And then obviously Dylan Windler and Jack from Belmont. I mean, that's four that have all gone the first round out of the OVC over in recent memories. But I think that would be the only other major league that you could even probably compare to the CAA when you talk about NBA-level players. And that's not even counting guys that weren't, you know, quote-unquote NBA, like, drafted, but were good enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, going back to your Davon Sadlers at Delaware, man. I mean, all the guys that have come through Towson and all the guys. I mean, that league is just stacked. Year in and year out with talent. So definitely got to give some props to the CAA. But we want to get to our favorite segment of the week, man. It's time for the craziest thing that we saw this week, man. And this week, man, the craziest thing that I saw was Holy Cross and BU played a series with masks. Now, the interesting thing about it was, so BU has a campus-wide mandate where you have to wear a mask at all times. So this includes athletics. So anything that's happening on campus, everybody has to be wearing a mask. So the first game in the series was at Holy Cross. So BU was wearing masks. Holy Cross was not. And it was an interesting game because BU came out of the gate struggling to shoot the ball. Holy Cross got to a 14-0 lead. I was like, man, these dudes are wearing masks. They can't shoot the ball. They can't do anything. It's got to be affecting their vision. Like, what's going on, man? But BU ended up finding their stroke, finding their rhythm. They ended up winning that game at Holy Cross the first night. Then they go to BU. This game is where both teams were wearing masks, and Holy Cross was able to win the game. So, I mean, both teams win on the road to get that split. Holy Cross, the team that was picked 10th in the Patriot League, BU obviously was picked first. So that was a pretty surprising outcome from the Patriot League. But, I mean, again, it just highlights the fact that it's going to be extremely hard to get sweeps in mid-major basketball this year. I mean, you got a team, Holy Cross picked 10th in the league, and BU that was picked first, and you get a split, you know. And especially after BU was able to win that first game on the road. Normally, if you can win the first game on the road, you're coming home, you know, you're feeling good about yourself. That should be a game that you should win. But Holy Cross was able to get the win, get the split. While both teams were wearing masks, although, you know, not necessarily the correct way, but, you know, it was crazy to see teams wearing masks in the game. That was the first time that I had seen that all year.
Yeah, nah, I, it was crazy, man. I seen somebody on Twitter and they were calling it like a chin diaper, you know, because, you know, I mean, it's hard to keep the mask, you know, above your nose for the whole game when you're moving around and trying to slide your feet and all that kind of stuff, man. So, hey, man, listen, I commend any team that's, you know, taking the efforts to stop the spread of the coronavirus, man, trying to keep these kids safe, you know. So, at the end of the day, man, I don't think it's you know, it's that, you know, crazy. I know it's probably a nuisance to the players, have to wear a mask, man. But, you know, if it's gonna get us through this season, and if it's gonna get us to, you know, to March Madness, you know, we're gonna be able to finish the season. And, you know, hey, like I said, I don't knock any team that's gonna be taking, you know, the precautions, you know, to kind of keep everybody safe, man. But, you know, I think, you know, we have to kind of definitely get you guys some games to look forward to this next coming weekend, man. You know, we already touched on the Northeastern and CAA, Northeastern and Hofstra matchup in the CAA. Definitely want to give a shout out to, you know, Tyson Walker, you know, at Northeastern, who he's leading the Huskies with 16 points and 5 assists a game. I think that he's definitely gonna, you know, be able to kind of match up with those, you know, those guys like Jalen Ray and Tariq Coburn at Hofstra and kind of putting the ball in the basket, man. So, I think that's gonna be the first game that I'm gonna have my eyes on. You know, also, you know, Gonzaga and BYU. Obviously, I think that's gonna be, you know, not only the game of the week as far as mid majors, but I mean everywhere. It's gonna be a lot of big games this weekend, but that's definitely gonna be one of my games that I have circled on my calendar, man. So, you know, I'll let you kind of give some games to look forward to, Ace. But I think, you know, for me, those are my top two that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. There's a few good games this evening. Obviously, we're going to get, you mentioned earlier, Richmond and Rhode Island are playing tonight at 6. Huge games for both teams. But I think Richmond really needs to get this win tonight to kind of get back on track. dropping two of their last three games to be able to beat a good Richmond, Rhode Island team will be huge for them. They're playing tonight at 6. Wolford and UNCG are playing tonight at 7 p.m. as well. Obviously, Wolford's out to a 2-0 start in the SoCon. UNCG is the team that was picked first in the SoCon. Haven't played up to expectations yet this season, but they're still a very good, very dangerous team. I think as this team, as the season goes on, that team will be there. So that's going to be a big game to watch in the SoCon this year, see if Wofford can kind of get out to a 3-0 start. You mentioned BYU, Gonzaga. You mentioned Hofstra, Northeastern. We're also going to see Nevada and San Diego State, a big game out of the Northwest. Thursday at 10 p.m. is going to be a late start. It's going to be two of the better teams in that league going at it. So make sure you're going to go and tune into that game. Our guys, man, Quinnipiac, they're getting their season going this weekend finally. In the MAC, they played four non-conference games, but they've gotten paused twice for COVID-19 positive tests. So they're going to finally get their MAC season going this weekend at home. They're playing Manhattan Friday and Saturday. So excited to see what those guys are going to look like this weekend. Hopefully they can go out and get two W's. It's going to be tough because Manhattan is coming off some losses. So they're going to be trying to get back in the win column as well. Obviously, and those guys always, you know, play us tough. Obviously, as well, you're going to have URI and VCU this Saturday at 2 p.m. VCU is a team that is, like I said, ranked number 31 in the initial net rankings. URI, depending on what happens tonight when they play Richmond, that could be a team that's going to be hungry to get a win there this Saturday. And then we touched on a little bit earlier this weekend, Saturday, Sunday, Colgate and Boston University. Those are the teams that were picked to finish first and second. BU got picked to finish first. Colgate was picked to finish second. Obviously, BU is the defending Patriot League champions. But Colgate obviously has a very convincing win earlier in the year. They both split their weekend series. So that's going to be a huge game in the Patriot League this weekend. BU and Colgate, both games will be at BU. They're not going to do the home and home thing. They will both be at BU this weekend. Unless the website is wrong, but on ESPN it said that they were both going to be at BU because it said that ESPN had said that both games were going to be at Holy Cross this weekend, but that was not true. They did a home and home. So, but nonetheless, BU Colgate big game in the Patriot League, and then my biggest game of the weekend, my biggest series is Loyola Chicago and Drake. I really want to find out what the Drake team is all about. They're undefeated. Loyola Chicago is a great team, as we all know, in the Missouri Valley. Those are probably the best two teams in the league. So I really want to see, you know, how Drake is going to do. If they come out of the weekend with this sweep, they should be in the top 25. They should be a top 20 team probably in America if they can sweep Loyola Chicago. So if they can get to 15-0. So I think definitely that's going to be a huge series with implications down the line. It's going to be at Drake. Loyola Chicago is going to be on the road. So definitely going to be a series that I will have my eyes on. But you mentioned, Drew, the NCAA tournament earlier. I would be remiss if we didn't mention it. It's officially NCAA announced that the entire 2021 men's basketball tournament is going to be taking place in the state of Indiana. There are going to be multiple host sites. They're going to be games at Lucas Oil Stadium, Bankers Life Fieldhouse, Hinkle Fieldhouse, Indiana Farmers Coliseum, Mackey Arena, and Assembly Hall, and then the Indiana Convention Center will be used as a practice facility. So it's official. All the games in this year's NCAA tournament will take place in the state of Indiana at different venues. That was huge news. It's come out the other day, 2 years ago, that dropped on Monday. So that's good news to hear the NCAA is finding a way to do this. We knew that the NCAA was planning to have it in Indianapolis or in Indiana, but it wasn't clear as to the facilities or how they were going to do it. So it's now official that they're planning to have it spread out across the state at all these different venues. So it's going to be interesting, man, to see if we can get there. I think we will. The overwhelming trend is that, you know, most teams are going to get to play 13 games. So I think everyone, you know, will be tournament eligible. And then it's going to come down to, you know, who's healthy, man? Who's testing negative? Because it's gonna be a shame. And I think it's almost inevitable that a couple of these teams probably are gonna get to the tournament, hear their name called on Selection Sunday, and then have to go on pause. And that's gonna be an absolute crushing scenario if it were to happen. Obviously, I don't wish that on anybody, so I will knock on wood. I don't wish that on any team, but with the way the numbers are looking right now, it's something that people have to think about. So definitely wanted to get that out the way.
Yeah, I mean, sheesh, if you're just going to throw that out in the universe like that, man, I rebuke that statement. You know, I hope that nobody, it happens to nobody, man. But I mean, sheesh, Ace, the disrespect. You want to see what this Drake team is about? I mean, they're 13-0.
Well, of course. I mean, I don't want to disrespect them at all. I didn't think that that's the best team that they've played all year. You know, Little Chicago is a team, obviously, with pedigree. You know, their team that we've seen compete at a high level for you know, not only this year, but in past seasons as well. So I really just want to see, man, you know, are they going to throttle them like they did, you know, Southern Illinois? Are we going to get a more competitive game? I mean, what is that series going to look like? So that's more so what I meant. I'm not coming up here saying that Drake, you know, is not deserving of any type of, you know, praise that they've been getting. So that's all I meant by that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Drake is a team that anybody's expecting to run the table, you know. And I think that the Missouri Valley is a conference that has been one of the best conferences, you know, historically for mid-majors. So I don't think anybody's expecting them to run the table in that conference. So, I mean, I think that a loss, you know, could come eventually. I think, you know, when we're talking about a team like Louisville Chicago, I wouldn't be surprised if they did lose this game. You know, but I say all that to say that even if they do take a loss, I don't think that diminishes, you know, how good this Drake team is. I don't think that diminishes the fact that they're going to be a team that at the end of the year, when it comes around time, you know, for Selection Sunday and March Madness, is going to be worthy of maybe getting an at-large bid, or maybe if they win the Missouri Valley, definitely can upset some teams. So you definitely want to put that out there, man. I think that, you know, whatever happens this weekend, I think that Drake has done a lot this year to kind of prove that they're worthy of a whole lot of praise, man.
Yeah, for sure. They just can't get swept. They can't get swept.
Right. They're at home. They're at home. So I don't think they'll get swept. I think that they'll definitely get at least one for sure, yeah. If not two. You know, if I had to bet on it, I think that I would say they'll get the split. But I would not be surprised if they do go ahead and get the sweep.
If they sweep Louisville Chicago, we're having a whole different conversation. If they sweep them, I think now you're talking about potentially one of the best teams in the country, out of the Missouri Valley, in Drake. So we'll have to stay tuned to that. That game is again going to happen Sunday and Monday. So make sure you guys tune in to that matchup, man. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Auto Bid, man. We want to thank you guys for tuning in, as always, man. As my guy Drew said at the beginning of the show, make sure you guys like, subscribe, give us a little rating, comment, tell a friend, man, so we can keep getting this episode in front of the right people, man, so we can keep growing this thing on a weekly basis, man. So every share on social media helps, you know, every retweet, every repost in your stories, all that, man, it helps. We are extremely appreciative of it. So thanks a lot for that, man. As always, we're going to let our guy Pull Up Tay take us out with some music. And until next time, folks. What's the topic of discussion? What we talking about? Take your best shot. I'm going to take the last shot. I'm drawing in the clutch, boy. Discussion.